The Drum Candy Podcast is brought to you by Drum Factory Direct.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into episode 12 of season 5 of the Drum Candy Podcast. This is your host, Mike Dawson, coming to you from Drum Factory Direct in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Since this is episode 12, this will be the last episode of this season, and we'll take a few weeks off to regroup. I've got a lot of content I need to film and get together. But we're going to end this season with a conversation with my good friend, Sahir Hanif. Sahir is the founder and master builder over at Masters of Maple Drum Company. He's also the founder of the production company, Ghost Tech. I've known Sai for many years back when he was making drums out of a storage locker in LA, and he's since gone on to build up a really nice company. He's made drums for everyone from Dave Grohl to Josh Homme, and he's teched for the Foo Fighters and many records, Queens of Stone Age. So this is a fun conversation. We basically talk about product development. So he's a madman with product development. He's had some really fun campaigns with his Trash Talk snare, the original kind of distressed Black Ugly. He's had a bell brass snare before everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon. So this is a deep dive with my good friend, Sai Hanif.
So where are you? Is this the headquarters? I've never seen the office here.
I'm in the office. Yeah. It's an office with a ton of drums. So it's good. I'm not on my phone or else I'd twirl you around, but maybe after I'll do a little walkthrough with you, man.
Sweet. Are you in the office much these days? I feel like you're around the world all the freaking time.
I'm running around, but the good thing is that this is probably in the last 2 months we're here, which is good because we are, fingers crossed, hopefully signing on the dotted line any day now once I get the power guys in, which this is the fun of making drums and stuff, is that power doesn't work, we're fucked. So it's kind of great. So hopefully in the next couple days we'll find out on the new space and then start moving right away. But this place has been great. Been here for about 8 or 9 years.
It's hard to believe.
It's bizarre. I feel like we just moved in, but it's cool. But we kind of expanded. So we've got this unit where we do a lot of the building and woodwork and all that stuff. And then next door where we do all the cutting. And then down the road is where we do a bunch of the finishing. But that's kind of the problem too. It's just keeping everything under one roof has kind of been the goal. So it's coming together, which is good. And we need the space, that's for sure.
Is it a big move or is it sort of local?
It's going to be a pain in the ass, to be honest, because anytime you got to move all these big machines, it's you got to crate them. We're not going far. It'll be a few miles in the valley, in LA where we are, but you got to crate stuff and, drums are funny because it's you got all this big stuff to make the stuff and then you've got all these small parts. So it's just screws and washers and lugs and, the deal. Drum factory is billions of parts at this point. So, it's a little crazy, but, there's plenty of bins everywhere is all I can really say.
Now, are you in same, would it be the, I don't know how this works. You had to get permits from the county. Has it changed anything for your structure wise?
Yeah, it does because we're just going to do everything under one roof now. So it's you have to deal with the permits. The finishing shop we bought out was because in California, especially, is really strict with finishing guidelines. So we got this permit that was kind of grandfathered in, which was a sweet deal. But the problem is, it's just it's three buildings is not, there's no way to make it really streamlined and optimal. And then, we've got a few giant storage units, which is all kinds of shit, backline and wood and that's the thing, because from where the stuff comes up from the mill, you can't really keep it in unregulated temperature, I guess you could say. So it'll sit for a day or two, but then it's got to be made into a drum or else it's going to be a problem. So it's exciting, man. It's those growing pains are always funny, to where it's dude, you've known me forever, we've been buds for so long, it's just we're to the point where it's oh shit, now we need that kind of space. It's a little cool, but it's oh man, we're doing this. So It's great, man. It's very exciting. But yeah, this year's kind of started off really nice. You know, it's a lot of new fun stuff and new challenges. But, you know, I think it's good. I mean, happy to have that problem rather than the other way of like, oh, we're shrinking.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you. Is this a, this yeah. must be a good, you know, because the industry is in just kind of disarray, like with Roland and Gretsch and DW and what is happening. But is it that, is that helping you in any way? Or
you know what, man, it's funny you mentioned that. Like when I was driving here, and you know, obviously I knew we were going to talk today, and even yesterday I just flew back in from Nashville this morning, and I was thinking about it because you know, touch base with the guys at Nelson and just kind of like, you know, checked it all out. And there's so many drums in there, but I'm like, for how many drums are in the store? Like, everything's so different now, you know, and you and I have been talking about it over the last couple of years just when we chat. But yeah, I mean, as far as those, you know, to answer your question directly, like, I couldn't tell you if, you know, the Gretsch sale and Roland being, you know, like the dominant player in drum business, I guess, which is kind of weird to think about because, you know, I'm just like, oh, the guys that make the TD-20, cool. Yeah, now they own the drum business. I don't know if it necessarily helps us because, you know, cats that are playing DW and Gretsch, they're not flocking to us, nor are we like trying to poach anybody or anything like that. But I think some guys are aware, you know, that play the stuff. But I think what this is going to do is really open up the floodgate to where, like, you know, endorsements the last few years, in my opinion, have just kind of, it's not the same as it used to be. I mean, the drum industry in general is not the same as what it was. So I think people can just play the shit they want, you know, it just doesn't matter anymore. Like, nobody's giving away, you know, it's not the 80s. People aren't getting kits left and right. So I think it's really going to be interesting. And you see it now, you know, it's like some of these, you know, we're a small builder too, any way you look at it. I mean, I know I'm like rich and baller and everything like that, but you know, I mean, I know I'm living it, baby, but no, you know, like we're a small builder too, but you can kind of see, like, you know, just off the bat, it's like, you know, Josh from Queens of the Stone Age and, you know, Ash Sohn, who's like, I've never met him, but you know, he's bought a few drums and just gives us a bunch of love on the internet, and what a sweet guy. But I think that's happening more, and you see with a lot of other companies too. It's like these big dogs that are like, you know, see stuff on Instagram and then they buy it, they put it up, and it gives them a bump. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really weird and strange time, but as far as like publicity and all that kind of stuff and people being open to new things, I think that's going to change quite a bit. But as far as the industry being in whatever this is, it's kind of wild. And I think there's no home base anymore. It's like, you know, I'm going to go to NAMM tomorrow, and that'll be like the first time it's like back at its normal time after COVID and all that stuff. So be interesting to see what the scene's like. But, you know better than anybody, there's modern drummers kind of around. Drum Magazine doesn't exist. So the things, you know, we had, shit, I was looking at it. Last time we did NAMM was in 2017, and it was so different. You know,
yeah,
7 years ago.
Different universe,
like,
yeah.
Completely, like, everybody was there. That was the epicenter. Things were happening. It really felt like, you know, everybody throws around. whenever you wear this, just tell me so I, you know, get my vest on. But I get so much shit for saying stuff. But everybody uses the fucking community. I'm like, there's no drum community anymore. It's wild. Yeah. You know, there used to be. And I'm kind of curious, like, where does it go? Because, you know, now it's like people listen to podcasts, which is great. And there's like Instagram. But before it was like so many other things. You know, people had like events and, you know, like clinics were like a fun place to hang out. Not that they're not anymore. But it was just a lot more of that, you know, and this is before like YouTube drummers and all that kind of stuff were just taking over the entire world, which is great. But it's just a different kind of thing now. You know, it's like there's like a community, but it's like a virtual thing. You know, like people do like virtual hangs, and it's
kind of weird that the drum industry went full in on the online thing, like without even having any real like data to back it up. Like, should you be doing like so? It really just. Like, what is the marketing strategy? Like, it just baffles me when I see like how these companies are just trying everything. Like marketing seems to be like what has been completely exploded. Like there is no marketing strategy that I'm noticing. It's just try it all. Try everything. Yeah,
no, and you're totally right. I mean, there was a minute where we were kind of guilty of it too, of like, okay, well, do you just do a bunch of stuff on like Instagram? And you know, the thought process of like, well, yeah, like how do you do it? Because like our Facebook page got hacked a few years ago and Epic. We lost like all that. It was awesome. Yeah, it was like 300,000 likes and it was gone. And you know, a lot of like your company archive is out too, you know, so that was kind of interesting. But for us, I can't talk to anybody else, you know, or speak to anybody else, I guess I could say. I think it was kind of freeing in a way, because just, I mean, dude, you and I are like buds, but like, I just don't care that much. Like, I mean, there's certain people that are, you know, they're all about the internet. Like they are marketers, you know, like you could, if it's drums, it's great, but you know, they could be selling sandwiches or candy or shoes or whatever it is. And they're amazing at it. I just, for what we were doing, it was always kind of the anti-marketing of like, yeah, we're just going to do like 30 of them and fucking whatever. Yeah. And that was just kind of the hit and run. So we've been doing that forever.
You stuck but with last, it.
Yeah, I mean that's just kind of what it is. After the Facebook thing exploded, it was like, okay, cool. And then like we still have the Instagram stuff, but like even, you know, a couple weeks ago we dropped that like 323 copper drum and it sold out in 10 minutes and it was great. But that's what we've been doing forever. Like this, you know, all these limited drops and, you know, limited edition, like it's not a kitschy thing for us. This is what we do because we can't make a million of them, you know. Mm-hmm. Trust me, if I could make my bell brass that version two, I would make it all day. It's just a monster to do it. And if I can't find the right material, it just doesn't make sense. Like, who cares? You know, it's just not the thing. But yeah, to answer your stuff, it was just like the marketing strategies. Like, we were thinking, like, okay, there was a minute where it was like, do we figure out like what trends are and how we do this stuff? And you know, we have all these great tools like metrics and stuff, but I was looking around, I was like, what are we fucking doing? That's not, you know, I don't care about that, man.
So how do people find your stuff? Is it just these loyal repeat customers? Are you getting new players? I mean,
a little bit of both. I mean, you know, we have done a few things to kind of pivot with the times. You have to, yeah, obviously like the drum click, you know, that you're a part of, which is good. You know, Bart, you know, on the drum history stuff, like we sponsor podcasts because that's where like you kind of have to figure out, well, where do our customers like live? And before it was magazines, now it's just podcasts and, you know, just around on the internet. So yeah, that's kind of where we went. And it's fine. But yeah, new customers are still popping up because, you know, we do have a pretty active roster. I mean, if you look at it, before, you know, 5-6 years ago, these guys were like the indie rock, like kingpins. Now they're, you know, the older statesmen of indie and festivals and all stuff. But we got a lot of guys that are doing a lot of great stuff. So, you know, that in that term, that's where the endorsement process really comes through, to where, you know, people are looking at what our guys are playing and they're nice enough to plug us and tag us. And that's great. And so there are new, like a whole new generation of kids, like discovering stuff, older. I mean, our demographic is pretty spread out too. I mean, we've got the guys at 18 to 25 that are just ripping in bands, going for it. And then we've got the 50, 60 year old, you know, retired lawyer that's just like, you know, I'm buying the dream kit I always wanted. So we have a pretty interesting spread and everything in between. So, yeah, I mean, it's, people are kind of, if you know about it, you just know about it. You know, it's like Dave Grohl and all these other guys that we can name drop, like they'll play the shit, they use it on recordings. And a lot of it's kind of funny, man. Like a lot of the stuff that our drums are at, you know, a lot of the studios our drums are at, people will just be discovering it that way. Like, oh man, that's crazy. And they're actually playing it, you know, because we're not in stores. I mean, the model with stores for us just never really worked because it really is super custom. And, you know, I've seen so many great companies, but sometimes it'll be a canceled order, or, you know, the store will order something and it's not really true to what, the company will be building or should be building or that they want to build, and just these kits sit there for years sometimes. And I just never really wanted that. And our stuff just changes a lot too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Our beta testing is literally the shit I'll hear in the studio, or one of the artists on the road be like, hey, why don't we try this one? And then, you know, we'll make it a few weeks later and we'll hit it and be like, ah, okay. So, you know, it still works that way too. And I kind of like that. I mean, it works for us. It's not for everybody else, but I think it's also from what we want to. Like, I don't want to, I'm not trying to duke it out with DW and Guitar Center. That's not really, you know, from the start, that's never really been my MO. Like, yeah, I think what they've accomplished is amazing and all these other big companies, but, you know, I'm not trying to make 800 blue drum kits. It's never really been my thing. And, you know, if that changes one day, then sure. But, you know, some of the other guys have made a play for that, and I think it's cool and good for them, but it's just never really, it doesn't seem true or authentic to what, you know, I've set out to do. And I just want to make cool shit for, you know, small batch of people and make sure everything's consistent and nice and, you know, kind of go from there. Really, you know, I don't really have the other goal to, you know, I'm not trying to have pallets of my shit come in on the one box and, all like the Pearl Export thing. Like, I don't really, you know, it's not really my deal.
Do you still do all the edges? Are you still involved in like every aspect of it at this point?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't get to, I'm not finishing every drum myself, which is, you know, that's also a good thing. That's how you know you're growing. But yeah, when it comes to shell design, you know, R&D, and, you know, I still get my hands on a lot of stuff too. Like, some of the dudes are like, dude, will you fucking, we're doing this thing. And I'm just, you know, now I'm the boss of like, no, I will cut these edges, son. So it's cool. But, you know, it's kind of cool to like, you know, we've standardized all the stuff. Like, we have our, you know, we have our sweet sauce of like, okay, this is how we do it, you know, because I think what I see in drums a lot, especially with new stuff, everybody's like, you know, we'll do this edge and this edge. It's like, yeah, you kind of got to figure out your formula. You know, it's like, it's weird to think too. I've been doing this since 2000, you know, or like, it's kind of wild. But I mean, I started off when I was a kid, but, you know, throughout the years you figure out like, oh yeah, this is the edge we love. I mean, granted, if somebody's like, I need this edge with this thing, you know, we'll do it. It's your drum kit, but we kind of have like a standard, like, you know, our identity, I guess you could say, of like the standards we put out. So, but yeah, you know, I'm still in the mix, man. I still like to get dirty and, you know, build stuff. And, you know, the other day I was laughing too, because it's been a minute since I'd done re-rings. I just had glue everywhere. I was like, God, I hated this job. Like, God, thank God I don't have to do it every day. But yeah, it was super, super funny too, especially with like, I went to go see the guys in the finish shop too. Just, I always like the finish process is one of my favorite things, because, you know, you turn these big wood drums that were just like all sanded and gross, and then that first hit of lacquer, anybody that's built a drum or like seen it done, it's like, that's when it really just comes to life. And it's like this great moment, you know. It's really nerdy to talk about it, but, you know, I was in there and like, you know, we're like wet sand and shit. I was like, God, I hated this job too. Like, it's just, it was wild, man. It was so much work to be, and that's the thing, like, it is so much work to make a drum kit. It is crazy the amount of like, you know, different skills you have to have, you know, just everything. And you can screw it up so bad along the way. It is just, God, it's kind of amazing anything is round when you think about it.
So
it's good, man.
Are you still like actively searching for new shell designs? I mean, is that still like a big, you haven't like, you found your core, but I mean, like, how often are you trying new stuff, really?
You know what, man? It's kind of funny. I'm working on a shell that is, I hope it'll come to life this year. It has been such a nightmare to do. And it's like this, you know, it's no crazy secret, but, you know, like those thinner, like back in the day, those thinner shells that had like, you know, the heavy die cast tube, like old Gretsch shells or whatever you want to say, you know, any brand plug in, but like the thinner shell, they ring out forever and they just sound so good. And then once you put hardware on them and a good edge, it's a banger. So I had this thing, I was like, well, you know, the 5-ply shell was like a big thing. And then, you know, the 3-ply with the re-rings and stuff. So I'm working on this 4-ply shell that has a 3-ply re-ring and it is kicking my ass. It just does not want to do it. But, you know, cause I'm also trying to do like maple, and then there's like, you know, maple, like rosewood core 2-ply inside maple, and then, you know, maple re-ring. I don't know what it is about. It's just like the angriest little piece of wood. It's just angry little, I feel like it's like a little wood gang, like, hey, fuck you, man. Sorry, I don't know how edited this podcast is. It's just, it's kicking the hell out of me. And it's just does not want to go together. I did a 10-inch rack tom, though, just as a test. It was like, oh, I just mess around with it. It's small, you know, go for it. And it was one of the best sounding things I think I've ever made. And I was like, okay, at least this is kind of moving in the right direction. But yeah, man, it's kind of an obsession, you know, because I'm busy just, you know, with life and business and all that stuff and everything we're doing. And it's like, I feel like the last few months has been a real change of like, we have to focus on just seeing what else is going, because I think it's really, everybody kind of gets a little, everybody wants to innovate, but you know, you still have to get things out the door and do all that stuff. And I think everybody's a little guilty of it. Once you kind of get a stride, you got a steady stream of orders. It's like, yep, get that thing going. And, you know, the last few months too, you know, we dropped a new badge and new things are going to start coming out, which is good. But it's been kind of a weird obsession. Like one day I just woke up and I was like, oh my God, we need to do this. You know, like then I'm like in the wood pile, like just grabbing stuff, like maybe this would be nice. And then I'm like, oh, we tried that years ago. It was terrible. But you know, it's kind of cool to like listen to things again too. Cause I think like everybody who's, you know, drummers or musicians, like your ears grow up too of like, oh yeah, maybe that sounds good now. And there's been certain things where I like, this pile of shit that I like kind of shelve occasionally, like just things I try out. I don't really like to throw a lot of that stuff away, but there's been a few times where I'm like, you know, late at night, just looking at stuff. I was like, oh, maybe that would sound good. And I built it out and I was like, oh, this sounds great. Like, why didn't I ever go with it?
But yeah. Why'd you abandon it?
You know, and I think that's the thing. It's like, we hit a stride with the other stuff and it was like, everybody wanted those. And then sometimes too, like I feel like with what we do, because we don't have, you know, the giant catalog of, you know, 30 different drum shells, because I think it kind of confuses people. It's like we've hit a few things that are like, these are guaranteed to work. These are going to be great. These are your standards. Why don't we go there? Sometimes getting a little too, and it just depends on who it is too, because, you know, again, our customer is so different and how we approach things is a little bit different in my opinion. So it's kind of like, some guys that really want to get weird with it and hear everything. It's like, maybe that's more for them, but you know, there's certain people that are like, yo, dude, just give me the mahoganies. Like, just, I don't wanna, you know, anytime I like start talking about wood, they're just kind of like, oh dude, don't. Like, let's go to dinner, man. Like, you know what I like, just, you know, here's the record, listen to it and just do your thing, you know, like, you know, I don't want to hear about that. So, you know, it just depends on who it is too.
So but, yeah, how long will you like chase the muse before you put it on the shelf?
It's got to be the thing, you know, it has to work. It has to hold up. Do a lot of stress testing now too, because, you know, it's pretty simple thing, but I just, you know, when I was touring as a drum tech, you know, and you're gigging too, it's like, going from hot to cold is like, you just, there's such a, and we don't do re-rings on everything. Not that that would save it, because those been too, but sometimes it was like, man, this is really sensitive to weather, you know, depending on what wood it was. And it always kind of go back, but I think we have to do a lot of testing. And then I think we just have to get more opinions on stuff too, because like, you know, I won't give it to any of the artists or even you if I send you something until I'm like, oh, this is the shit. This is great. Then when you get it in the studio, get it under mics, and then you can kind of get the other opinions, because that's the fun part of it too, is just getting everybody's sense of like, oh yeah, this sounds great, or that's horrible, man. And we've had a few of those too. It's like, yeah, it's not really good. And you're like, okay. Yeah, I guess.
What do you do? Yeah, like your wounds, you're like, I think it sounded good.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes, and that's the fun thing too, is like, it's so subjective. You just don't really know. It's just like an engineer too. It's like, I've been on so many recording sessions. It's like, as a drum tech too, and you're hitting these things, and you know, the guy is going to look at you and just like, oh dude, no, get that out of here. And sometimes you're like, oh, that's weird, I thought it sounded great. So yeah, but that's the fun of it too. Just trying to really get something into, get into shape to actually release. So I think, you know, we could do it a lot faster. You know, we don't have the red tape of like a massive company or anything like that, or like manufacturing restrictions and, you know, SKUs and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if I get an idea, I mean, I could put it out in a couple months, if anything, you know, just kind of messing with it and really testing it out. But, you know, some of the bigger stuff that, you know, we've done in the past, like, took a little bit longer, just because, like, you know, we're also dealing with these living things like pieces of wood. So some of these things don't want to cooperate. I mean, hence that little four-ply shell with the rings. Like, that thing's like, nah, man, we're not working for you today. So,
I mean, is that, the question is that project going to be worth it? Is it going to sound that much different or better for you to continue to research it?
And that's the thing too. I will say in that instance, and that's why I'm kind of chasing the dragon a little bit, so to speak, is that when I hit it, I was like, oh, this is good. Like, this sounds cool. It's a little bit of a hybrid of like, you got that old school kind of thin sound, but it rings out in the best way. And you don't really need to. Yeah, I think now, like, I'm just kind of straying away from like taping stuff and just gelling it. It's just, you know, it's a drum, it's going to ring. Like, just let it do its thing. But that's why I'm like, why don't we just start it out to why don't we blend a wood and come up with a shell to where it's going to sound kind of what you're going for with that too. So it's like those lo-fi shells we do, it's like the two innermost plies are vertical, that shoots everything down the floor. It's like, and we've had really good luck with it. You don't have to put, you know, the wads of tape and paper towels floor tom legs. It's like, you know, it's just sounds good, you know, maybe put some cotton balls inside of it and let it ride. You know, that's kind of the thing. I mean, I think a lot of people, I had this thing where for 2 years, I was like, man, people just hate the way drums sound. Every session. I was like, you just don't like drums. It's fine. And it was kind of true. It was like, okay, let's get this banging kit out and like tune it up and put ambassadors on it. And then it'd be like, put the re-rings on, or the Richie rings on. I was like, all right, I know where this is going. Then, okay, get the tissue paper out. And I'm like, oh, you just fucking hate the way drums sound. It's like, and it was true, you know? It's just like, let that shit ring, man. Tune those things up, you know?
I mean, when I think of your drums, initially, it was always like built for the robust touring life. Like, they were built to last the cycle of in and out of trailers and just getting abused on the road. And I think that still holds true, but I'm wondering, are you thinking more studio oriented now, or is it, I mean, how do you balance like a drum that'll sound great on stage versus a drum that'll sound great under mics?
That's a great question. My school of thought has always been, it's got to work for both. It's got to work for everything, because, you know, we have plenty of people that play our drums that are in a great position to afford, you know, I got a studio kit, I got a road kit, I've got one for the house. But, you know, there's a lot of guys that play our stuff that are like, yeah, man, that's the one. And it's funny too, because sometimes I'll be like, hey, do you want me to bring something in? Or if they call me in for the studio stuff, and that's always a great honor either way. But I was like, do you want me to bring something in? They're like, no, we're using that one. That's it. That's my thing. Because, you know, again, the way they're built is, they're built pretty rugged. I mean, everything's thought out, like down to like the fasteners and everything in between. It's like, you know, that like with some chefs, like they don't put it on the plate unless it like serves a purpose and it's delicious. It's like the same thing on the drum shell. It's like, doesn't serve a purpose if it's not built to last. Like, it's just not going to be in there. You know, there's no point, you know, there's no like ornaments on these things, you know. But I think it needs to do the job in both. And the way we build stuff is, you know, there's no catalog, and it's, you know, everybody always kind of went, here's what we make, and you figure out where you fit into like our thing, you know. And that was fine. I worked for a long time, but the reason we started making drums this way was that, nah, man, like we'll do like an old school or like a new school kind of vibe, and then you tell us, and then we'll make the blend around you. And I think that's why so many people just love their drums. They want to use it in the studio. They want to use it live. And, you know, we build them for everything in between, you know, and just to last too. And that's been a nonstop thing with like supply chain and, you know, making sure you have the right metals to make components. And, you know, some of these factories too were like, they needed certain machines to actually make this happen, because we try and use as many U.S. manufacturers as possible. And it's not, you know, like things in Taiwan and China are incredible. Like those factories are unreal. But it's me, because I'm a nutcase. I want to pop in and see them, like, okay, is this doing right? Or, you know, spot check, quality check, plating checks, all that stuff. So we've actually purchased machines to put in those factories to kind of hold up the integrity of it and how they're manufactured. So yeah, that's a really big like labor of love. Like I think when you pick up a drum or something that's like quality made, like, you know, like there's this explosion of like, you know, union made stuff, like good leather goods, shirts, like anything you pick up, you should be able to feel the quality of it. And mm-hmm. I feel like drums, especially you pick something up, if it's like, you know, a feather, you're just like, oh, this is a bummer, because you know, you're hitting these things. They got to have a little bit of weight to give you back. So, you know, I've always been a thing, like you could pick up some of the drums I make and it's just like, oh yeah, there's some stuff here, because
yeah.
Plating's not cheap. The castings are brass. Like it's like a real thing, you know? So, and you know, it makes it a little bit more expensive, but at the same time, like you're buying this thing once, like, is it that big of an issue? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. So that's the other thing too. It's like, everybody's always down to spend a ton of money on everything else, but then they're like, ah, drums are, you know, cause they're just so cheap, you know, and you can, but you get what you pay for, really. So I think all in all is like, you got to build something that's ready for anything. And luckily, you know, like sometimes when guys use their tour kits in the studio, it's just such a cool like thing of like, oh yeah, that's their shit. They love mm-hmm. that. You know, yeah, it sounds good and it's their sound. And, you know, if it works for what they're doing, then great. You know, so it's been really fun to see that.
So I want to kind of work backwards a bit.
Yeah.
With the 323. So you knew you were only going to be capable of producing a limited number.
Yeah.
So you got them all done. You're ready to put them on sale. And you probably knew they were going to sell out pretty quickly. So does that mean you're expecting, does that mean you already have the next thing ready to go? Like how far into product development in the future do you operate?
You know, with the way we're doing stuff, like the kind of the quick hitter and limited drops, like I think this one's kind of an interesting one, because the coppers were super fun. The 323s are great. To answer your question, I kind of know what we're going to drop this year. I think we'll do like two or three more, but they've got to be a little different. Like that, you know, I just don't want to drop stuff that we've done before, because it just doesn't, you know, just seems like, you know, I used to just be like, oh, cool, new for 2000, whatever. They just painted it red. Mm-hmm. It's like, I didn't want to do that, you know? So I wanted some kind of cool, kind of interesting things. But, yeah, there'll definitely be another aluminum drum coming out, because people really like those. And, you know, just kind of builds on that whole trash talk thing, which is super fun and did really well for us. I think the next thing is like a different kind of a wood snare drum with a different layup is going to be coming out too. Mm. So
you've got these, you know, your year is sort of planned. You don't have to tell us what they are, but how far in the design are you with that? Are you still just formulating the ideas as you go?
The design for the wood drum is pretty much done now. It's just putting it through the paces and testing. Mm. The aluminum drum, we're kind of experimenting with, I had this, I come up with these dumb ideas of like, you know, at night, you know, I'm like, here's what we will do, you know, like proclaiming all this crazy shit. And I was like, we're going to roll our own aluminum and do this thing. And then we'll like do a prototype. I'm like, man, this is wild shit to try and get this thing done, you know, or you just see these things in your head and you're like, okay, well, how hard can it be? Cause we could just roll it this way and you're messing with some manufacturing techniques. And then it's like, oh yeah, that doesn't sit well, or like the way it butts up. So then it's like back to the drawing board, a little bit of R&D with that stuff too. I mean, aesthetically, it's pretty straightforward. We've got some pretty cool, like things will kind of drop, but that wood drum is going to be a bit of a hybrid as well. It's kind of a, we're taking a little bit of a radical approach to it, just like change up the vibe. You know, that's the thing. It's like, I think as far as like the drums go is one thing, but like the influence around it, like, you know, culturally, it's kind of what we're trying to bring into. Mm-hmm. And just, I just don't want boring drums anymore. And it's no offense. That's not a shot at anybody else. It's just like, you look at the same shit every day. It kind of sucks. Whereas I'm like, you know, you eat all these great foods and you like, you know, you dress a certain way and like you go to places and it blows your mind. I'm like, that's what drums need to be, you know? So that's why it's like some of the woods we bring back on trips. And, you know, I've been lucky to tour a lot the last few years and see all over the, I mean, I've been touring stuff as a kid, but you know, those are the kinds of things that need to like influence drums. Like even the, you know, just simple things too, like the new badge looks like a tree stump and I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of fun. Like one of our loggers cut a cookie off on it and sprayed painted the M just like designated for us. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was like, mm-hmm. maybe we should make a shirt out of it. And then it just like the shirt turned into a logo. The logo was like, and I was like, fuck, we need to give a badge a facelift. And like, you know, I was getting a little tired and, you know, we want to streamline a little bit, make it a little bit smaller. And then that's what became the badge. So
you know what's interesting about the new badge is I thought it was your same badge. Like it was so like, of course that's what they would have their badge be. Yeah, sure. Like, why did it take so long?
No, you know, it's funny, man. It's like a few other people said that they're like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. They're
yeah.
Like, I thought that was around. I was like, no, but the, you know, the guys that log with us sometimes and will cut stuff open, they'll, that's how they always do it. So I'm so used to seeing that. And I think we've had like photos before of like just you know, logging trips or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Like it's kind of cool, you know, but you know, we sized it a little bit differently. It's a little bit smaller, more streamlined kind of a look. And then, you know, our other thing was too, is that, you know, we all metal drums, acrylic drums, whatever we're making stuff out of, like the inside badge, like the little wood cookie is like what a log cutoff looks like. And, and I was like, well, there's always going to be wood on our drums, which is kind of cool, you know? So it kind of made more sense to do it that way. So yeah, it's kind of cool, man. But yeah, we're pretty deep into design. I'm always just working on stuff too. I mean, I've got a lot of notebooks I carry around with me and people think I'm doing very like philosophical work and I'm just like drawing just crazy shit all the time. So it's cool. But yeah, I think that's something that's never going to stop. And, you know, if I ever get bored with it, that's when you're like, oh, there's a problem with that. It's still exciting. It's still fun. Yeah. But now I feel like I'm kind of, I never really looked at drums to like influence stuff because then that's when you start making other people's stuff and you don't want to do that, especially out of respect for everybody. Cause that takes however their process works. You don't really want to impede on that. But I think with me, it was like, now it's to the point where it's like, oh yeah, we're like taking everything in, like through artists, through travel, through friends, and just, you know, all the stuff I look at all day. It's the last thing I really look at is drums, you know? Mm-hmm. So. Kind of cool.
Well, let's talk about the design of the 323 as a case study.
Yep.
How did it go from let's make a copper drum to let's make a copper drum with these oddly offset lugs and have black nickel hardware? Like, how did it become what it became and why did you settle on that design?
Yeah. Good question, Michael, my man.
I mean, it worked because you sold them all.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, I was looking at just, you know, it was like, cool. Like a copper drum would be great to bring out, be kind of fun. The thickness was kind of a no-brainer. Like 1.2 is kind of the sweet spot. You know, any thicker works as well. But there's this kind of a millimeter is too thin, 1.2 is perfect. So that way you don't have to worry about it crushing like a soda can, essentially. Mm. The offsets, the copper, first of all, was kind of like, we'll polish it up a little bit because a lot of the inspiration was just like walking around LA, just being downtown a bunch. They have a lot of these great old like Art Deco style buildings that has like polished copper throughout, and it's just so pretty. And then, you know, it's like when you're a kid, you get a shiny penny. I was like, you know, it kind of translated in a lot of ways. I felt like with the badge being new, it was like a new start to everything. And it was around the new year too, which is kind of cool. So I was like, I feel like a shiny new penny. Mm. It's just like, polish that thing up and call it a day, you know? So that was kind of fun. And then the offsets were kind of a throwback, man. I'm an Orange County kid. So OCDP was king when I was a kid. And it was just kind of one of those things like, and I was looking at all those cool, like vintage sonar kits that had the offset. I was
fucking
weird thing to do. Just like, it was weird. Cause then, I had a vintage Orange County or like OCDP, like those half inch thick acrylic, like, and it had the offset Baltimore lugs, those square ones that you see at the time. And I was looking at these old sonar, like a buddy of mine gave me some like old sonar catalogs, and they had like the vintage kits with the offsets. I remember just looking at it, I was like, this is the weirdest thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it makes total sense because there's no space to go anywhere. But I was like, a fucking strange decision to make. Like, yeah. But like, how weird that must that have been, because forever it's like traditional, everything lines up and
yeah,
it's all about geometry. And then, you know, Klaus or Hans or whoever was hammered at sonar said, you know, we're going this way. And they were like, yeah, sounds good. And so I made up this story in my head. I was like, that's how they made this decision, you know? So, but that was something that, you know, our stuff is always in line and, you know, looks very clean and classic and, you know, it's pleasing to the eye with like the geometry of it. But I was like, fuck it. Let's just like have some fun with it. Like, it just makes sense. And then I was like, let's go with like the single version of it. And all the dudes were like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, you know, and I was like, let's just try one. And we did it. And I remember I put it together and I was just sitting there looking at it. I was like, this makes me feel weird.
Yeah.
But in a strange way, I'm like, I kind of like it. Like, because it's a weird offset. It's a 7/8. So it's not like the traditional, it's not like a 50, 50
yeah, exactly, kind
of thing. It makes you feel a little weird. And like the drum, I was like, is it moving? But then like, I don't know. I just had this weird thing of like these buildings in LA, these low riders I was looking at for how cool the pop was, because, you know, like, you know, street culture and all that stuff, like you have these real clean lines on a car and then all of a sudden the paint would be like the pop. And I was like, got these really clean lines, like you with this really pretty polished copper. And then all of a sudden the pop is like, you know, the lugs and the way they stack up. But then it was just like, you know, black nickel and copper, I'm like, that's like a cool combination just in general, you know? So I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's just run with it. We went for it. And then, you know, the people who cast the badge, I was like, can we do like a copper, like, can we match it basically? And they're like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then we did it and we polished one up and it looked so good. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, let's just have some fun with it. And it was like a very, when I was looking at it too, I was like, this is the fucking, it was throwing me off with like the offsets, but I was like, that's kind of the fun part. It's like, fuck it, man. Like, that's just our shit. So,
it's disconcerting in a cool way.
Yeah. It made me feel very dangerous. You know? So that was that, man. Yeah. It was a fun thing. And two, I was like, I know we're only going to do a handful of these. So let's have some fun. And it was so funny getting the, when you buy them online, you could like put a note in there or something like that. And everybody was kind of the same page. Like, they remind me of my sonars. They remind me of the CDP offsets. And it was kind of funny. I'm like, oh yeah, that like spoke to a few people and it was cool. And a lot of one of the dudes that bought it was so cool. I can't remember his name, but I have to look it up. But he was literally like, I'm not a drummer. This shit just looks dope. And I was but it turns out he was, he's like a guy who has like, he's like an internet personality that like, shops for sneakers, you know, and it's like, has a fairly big following, but he was like, I just kind of like the way it looked. And I was like, great. Right, so have a drum. Yeah, and he hit us up. He's like, I got it. It just sits on his shelf. Like he just liked, and it's next to all kinds of cool, like pairs of Jordans and shit. And I was like, yeah, that's great. You know? So yeah, it was kind of fun. It was a little bit of like, the 323, think of it this way. It's like, I had a lawyer one time a few years ago. I don't even know if this guy's alive, but he was a lawyer who came in, but he had a rat tail in the back, like the haircut. Mm-hmm. So he presented himself really nice, but then when you turn around, it was like the finger. And I was like, that's basically the rat tail of drums off our shit. So if you got one of those, watch out. I'm a badass, you know? So it's the rat tail of my product line.
Now, is this something, I know you've been pretty, I don't know what the adjective would be. You've been pretty like steadfast with when something is sold out, it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe you brought the back Black Ugly back once and the Bell Brass once.
Yeah. But and that's kind of been the thing too. It wasn't really just the market being like saturated with some stuff. And I felt like you have to kind of educate people, but sometimes it could be misconstrued as like shit talking. And that's not what we wanted, because those drums are beautiful. They're amazing. Like, you know, it's great. I think to be honest, man, take away this year, right? Like with the Zildjian thing coming out, like that's amazing. And that was really thoughtful what they did and what a cool piece of history to have. But everything before, man, like we brought back the Bell Brass in 2010. That's what people forget.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, we're not this massive company that can market to everybody. And, you know, some people just don't know about the shit. But I feel personally that that drum has been bastardized in so many different ways. It's just not, we shouldn't be comparing Bell Brass drums. It's like, that's what the fuck that thing is. Like, if you're going to make it, make the shit. You know, and that's what I don't like about certain people out there just like, oh, yeah, you know, it's cool. You know, it's like, you can't make that drum for $1,000. Sorry, man. Like, and that's the other thing, too. It's like kids flexing and having, you know, fake black cards, you know, like, no, the whole thing about having like a black Amex or a Bell Brass is because you have that fucking thing and you're at a certain level and you got it, you know, like, don't fake it. And that's been the problem, too. It's like, and don't get me started about the patina on the Black Ugly. Like, it was one of the first drums out there with that. Now dudes are sitting there just, you know, hosing it down and throwing salt on shit, and you're like, it's just different, man. And you know, it's cool to see the different iterations. It's not talking shit on like people doing it. It's just also too, it's like, if you're gonna do it the right way. I've seen a lot of people paint it on. Like, it's just like, nah, man, it doesn't, you know, it's not the thing. And
is that what keeps you from bringing it back? Like at this point, and you just don't want to see it again? Like, are you just not interested in it? Or because the drum sounds amazing. You could always bring back that drum. But
well, that's the thing. I'll tell you this. If we needed to do something, like if we ever gotten like a slow period or like needed some dough or something like that, I don't mean to sound like an asshole. We could bring that drum back and sell a ton of them. Or we could say, fuck everything else we're doing. We're doing the Black Ugly, we got the Bell Brass, and you get any wood drum you want, and it would just be fine forever, you know, and or however long till people got sick of them or something like that. But that's the thing, they're just classic, so people just really like them, you know, they just sound good. And again, like I didn't invent those drums, like that was just, they stopped making those drums, and I was like, well, I'm gonna just do that then if that's the case, because there's a void. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think I'm in a weird spot with that, truthfully, because I don't like what's happening with those drums that I, like, love. And then I don't like how things that we did kind of got a little ripped and just, you know, thrown into something else and not in a very tasteful way, you know, any way you look at it. But I just am kind of like, I think we've kind of maybe just left those there and they're great for what they were. And we're trying to push the envelope and move on and see what's there. But You know, we did a couple runs of the Uglies and they're great, and a few versions of the Bell Brass, but who's to say, you know, maybe in another year, if I keep hearing it and just keep hitting them of like, oh man, that's got to come back. You know, it's too good not to make it. And yeah, maybe we will, you know, but as far as now, I just kind of, I've kind of had to make my peace with it a little bit, and don't want to, you know, I don't know. I love those drums so much. I really don't like the fact that things have been kind of cheapened about them. And it's not like my stuff getting ripped off. I don't mean it like that. It's just, you know, certain Bell Brass versions are just like, that's not the thing, man. Like, it's hard because you see these people, like these younger people, like buying these drums, like, oh, I got a Bell Brass. Like, I'm Lars now, or I'm, you know, fucking Dave Grohl on Nevermind. It's like, that ain't the thing, man. And you don't want to burst their bubble, and you're just like, fuck, you got hosed, you know? It's like, sucks, you know? Like, save up for it, man. Get the real thing, or, you know, put some work into it. It's just, you know, some people just want it, and it's just there, and it's fine. But again, you can't, that thing needs real chrome over brass die cast tubes, and that thing's not $1,000 drum. It's really expensive to make those drums, and you could feel it, you know.
Yeah,
that thing should have you in a back brace after a month of touring.
Or
drum tech.
So has those feelings, because I'm thinking about what you've done since then, those were kind of like your own twist on a tribute to a legendary thing. So has been the Trash Talk and the 323, I don't see anyone like wanting to copy that because they're so like
they're a little weird.
Has that been like, for now, when you're designing new stuff, it's like, what can we do that no one will want to rip off because it's so unique to us?
I also think too is like the Trash Talk was a little bit of like, we see it, it's all good. And it was just like, that was my stupid thinking of like, well, you know, man, if you guys are going to do this, I'm just going to go over here and do that. And then the badge was such a fucking ridiculous thing too. That was like, it's not anything we put on a drum kit or anything. It didn't have a traditional badge. It was like, you know, lips biting and like, a little tooth at the end. It was fucking insane. And you know, when I was drawing it, everyone was kind of like, I wish you could have seen, everyone's like, this happening, you know, like, oh, this is the thing. And they're like, oh shit, you know. And like, you know, Carlos is one of the guys that helps do all like the enamel pours and all that stuff, and he's just like, fuck, dude, really? And he's like, you know how intricate that is? Like, I'm like, dude, just get the enamel out, man, we're gonna party. So that was the thing. And I think that was a little bit of like an answer to it too. I'm like, I'm just gonna make a six lug aluminum drum that's kind of a piece of shit, because that was the other thing too, is like, those drums, I mean, make no mistake about it, were pricey. They were not cheap, you know. Granted, we have to cover our costs, but like, it's just expensive to make them with the materials and all that stuff. But then, you know, I was going through this thing of like, when those drums are starting to get ripped, and then people were selling drums that were, you know, maybe not on the same level as far as tone and, you know, components and all that stuff, but they were selling it for more. And I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, this is not the same thing, you know? And I was like, okay, whatever, we're going to go over here and I'm going to do the opposite and just be like, cool, I want, you know, I love six lug drums too, so they're super fun. And then I was like, wow, be kind of fun to like hear that, you know, just a six lugger, and let's just make like a shitty aluminum drum. And we did, and I saw how low I could get the cost on it, because aluminum is not very expensive either, which was great. And I was like, let's just put this thing out here and just go for it. And it was the exact opposite. And everyone was like, you're doing that for, wait, really? Like, even the artists were like, oh shit, this is, I'm getting one of those, you know? Because then I was just like, yeah, I don't want to be as precious about it. You know, it's like, I'm setting up Bell Brass drums with like white gloves and polishing. I want this thing to look like a piece of shit. Like, just complete. And we just left it bare, and it was kind of like, it's kind of a fun drum, you know? So that's kind of what we did. And then we came out with the six lug, kind of freaked out a few people. They're just, you know, they're like, I don't really know. But then once they'd get their hands on it, they'd hit it. Or if I would be around, I'm like, hey, check it out. And we'd tune it up and like, oh, that's great. But, you know, not everybody's around. We don't have stuff in stores, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then by the time we would get to releasing, you know, like videos on it, the drum was gone. It mm-hmm. just ran out of them. So I was like, okay, that's convenient. So Six Lugs was kind of off-putting to people. But then we made one, I made a prototype that was 8. And I was like, let's just see how it sounds. And I put die-cast tubes on it. It was like, uh-oh, that thing is like shit. You know, like, you know when you hit like any drum in your thing or you go to a store and tap around, you hit it, that one thing, you're like, uh-oh. You know, it was like that. It was like, shit, this is bad. And then it was like, all right, let's just do it. But then I was like, we can't make it look the same. And then I was like, those lips are red. I was like, let's just do... I was listening to a lot of Rick James at the time. So I was like, let's make that shit red. And they were like, what is wrong with you, man?
I forgot you did the red one. Wow. Yeah.
That was kind of like an under the radar one too. And we did 20 of each and those sold out really fast. And it's one of those, again, like I kind of forgot about it too. Like we have one in the office case, which is cool. But I walk by every day. I'm like, oh, yeah, we should really do that. It was so great. It was just not even anything that people like realized. And like some guys that had the 6, you know, a lot of the guys that are touring on the circuit, they'll see somebody who has the 8 and they're like, oh, fuck, you got one of those. Like, what was that? Because I don't even think we put it out. Like,
I've never seen like an announcement, like a photo or something. That's all I remember seeing.
We put it out and, you know, again, you know, super thankful is like that shit was gone. Like those things went in a day. It was not even close because a lot of the people that had 6 were like, oh my God, there's an 8 and we can get a die cast tube on it. Like game over, you know? So it was cool. So yeah, that and the copper, but it's not like I'm doing everything to be like a troll and just like, you know, mean about it. It's just like, it's whatever sounds good. And I just want things that are kind of interesting too. It's like, you know, there's enough, you know, brass drums out there. There's enough like, you know, hammered bronze drums or whatever, you know, it's like, I want to do something a little bit different. So is the
copper going to like live another life or is it kind of, that's the drum we're done with copper for a while?
Yeah, there's going to be another iteration of the coppers, but okay. It's going to be a little bit more old school looking. So I think we'll do that, probably another variation of the trash shock. And then, like I said, a wood drum's coming. That's going to be the thing. But I'm kind of, we get a lot of shit because people are like, do you even make stuff out of maple anymore?
That was going to be my next question.
Sometimes, you know, but then it was like, I have this quest of like, we're going to drop, mark my words, Mike, you hear it here first, kids, on the Drum Candy podcast. We're going to make the best maple drum kit fucking ever. And that's just going to be the thing. It's not going to have any of the blends. We're not going to put anything in it. I want pound for pound, the dirtiest maple drum kit. It can be hi-fi. You can tune it low. I want something with like such a crazy range. So we're working on, right now of like just, you know, really beautiful maple for the outside, you know, just naturally figured and stuff. I'm working on this aging technique for wood, and blistering, like, you know, that ancient Japanese technique, that I want to combine it. Like I want it to be all maple. I just wanted to use a few different building techniques to like combine and actually make the shell. So that's kind of where we're going with it too. So yeah, that's kind of the goal. I have a lot of shit that I'm working on. I was like, yeah, we need to do this, man, for sure. But everybody's like, has there ever even been a maple kit in the last couple of years? I'm like, yeah, there's plenty, but it's just people are just like, oh, it's so plain Jane. And then we're doing all this weird shit of like, we're blending this Babinga and this rosewood. And it's like, oh, it's all this stuff. And it's so cool. But people forget, like, sometimes it's like a, we made a birch kit a few months ago that I was like, oh my God. I called the guy. I was like, I don't want to send this to you. I was like, why? I was like, it sounds so good. I was like, do you want to cancel this and I'll just keep it? And he was like, no, absolutely not. Give me my shit. But yeah, there's just so, that's the thing, man. Like, I light up because I'm like still like a little kid about this stuff. Like, you know, as complex as these things are, it's the best part about drums. Like, as complex as you want to get with the blends and this and the edges and this, that, and the other. But then sometimes you'll just hit like a plain Jane maple floor tom and be like, God damn, that sounds good. You know, so just the fun of it. And you just don't know what it's going to sound like either. You know, I've built these drums 100 times over, those same shells, and they're all just a little different, and it's kind of fun. And but that's like the same thing with like Black Beauties and Acrolytes and stuff too. When you find the good ones, you're like, oh shit, I'm keeping that forever. Some are like, no, it's not my thing, you know, it's just kind of cool. So they're just these things that are alive constantly, you know, even after you make them into stuff. So it's kind of the fun part of it.
What happens if your maple kit just makes you never want to make a blended shell ever again?
we'll kill them. I don't know, man. We'll just be like, that's what you're playing for this 2-year stint until I get over it. No, I mean, that's the cool part too. It's like, those are the goals like I have in my head of like, I want to make the best maple kit and just keep it simple of like, you know, 6-7-ply shell or whatever, but like, you pick the sizes, but this is kind of the shell layup that we're going with. That sounds great. And, you know, it's kind of the thing, because I feel like there's this rat race now of like, you know, you've got these amazing guys over at Nordic that have literally opened the floodgates of like, custom builders can get mahogany and cherry and like all this shit that's mind blowing. I told Dave at Nordic the other day, I was like, if you were around when I was starting, I would have never started making drum shells. Honestly, like I no chance, man. You know how gross that shit is? It's a pain in the ass to do it. Really expensive. I was like, you would have saved me a load of money on this headache with these machines. But yeah, that's the reason I started doing it, even though it's called Masters of Maple, and that's still the joke, is I wanted to do more than just, you know, maple. Like I love it. It's great. But there's all these other cool things in there that are, you know, around, but that's kind of the fun part. So it really depends on the player too. Like, it's not that I want to do a certain thing. Like, I know what I think sounds good and I can help advise, but some people just kind of know stuff and they'll be like, yeah, I hit this old mahogany drum and that's where I want to go. And it's like, great, let's do it. You know, let's party. So it just depends, man. I mean, I'll pretty much do whatever people want. You know, it's kind of, it's your kit at the end of the day. We can help like pick stuff out. I mean, there's some shit that I'm like, yeah, I don't think that like the composition of the shell doesn't really matter as much, but like certain sizes, I think we've kind of clamped down a little bit now. I'm like, I'm not the guy that's going to build a 20x20 or 20x24. I'm like, I'll give you the names of people that will be happy to do it. It's just not, you know, it's not going to sound great, you know, for what we want to put out there. So, you know,
so let's say I called you for like, I'm going to do a movie soundtrack session.
Yep.
And it's like, Sai, I need you to just bring me some drums. It's going to work for everything. Who knows what the hell we're going to do? It might be some jazz. It might be some heavy metal. Like, what would you bring to the session?
That's a problem, sweet Michael, because I have a lot of shit that's not mine either. You know, I've got a touring on the road was funny because I would just come back with like, all kinds of shit. You know, I have a deep obsession with Fibes drums. So I have a bunch of Fibes kit. I've got 5 that are functioning. I've got another 5 that I haven't had time to like make parts for and like kind of deal with, you know, but you know, typical like on teching sessions and stuff, like I've got usually 2 to 3 big road cases that are like, you know, 8 snares tall that will have, you know, like an actual Acrolyte. I have this Superphonic that's kind of, it's a little out around, but it just sounds great on everything. I take those 2 out on everything. I'll bring in like a maple. I'll bring in a blended bell brass, always, you know, 5.5 and the 6.5 version. Bring in Trash Talks. And then I'll throw in like 4 or 5 wild cards that are just a little strange, you know, maybe like an 8x14. A little 6-lug wood guy. You know, I've got some old, like, I've got some old Noble and Cooleys I really like. Just depends. I mean, the thing is too, like, if I'm lucky enough to know the drummer ahead of time, I can kind of tell like what they like. But if I know the engineer or the producer, you know, we usually have notes of like, this guy liked this and et cetera, et cetera. So I'll bring in a bunch of stuff, but we have like another warehouse just full of my shit for teching. You know, it's like 300-400 cymbals, all kinds of weird percussion, and then probably about 30 to 40 drum kits. And that's after I did some cleaning out. So, yeah, I mean, I'll bring in, you know, the standard small jazz kit, and then I'll bring in like the rock kit, and then a few other pieces that I know that always just sound good. You know, I got a 60s bowling ball Ludwig that sounds amazing. This one bass drum that was an orphan that just kills it on a lot of stuff. So that's cool. And then strangely enough, man, I made these 28-inch bass drums that people love. Like, there's a Silver Sparkle one that we brought out. That was the original one. And not to name drop, but Sir David Grohl literally convinced me to sell it to him because he loved it so much. But that's, we use that on like Arctic Monkeys and Queens and like, it's everything. And that was actually, we built the first house kits for Capitol Studios in the tower. That was the kit that we went in there, and the engineers put it through the paces. Al Schmidt, you know, RIP, when he was alive, you know, one of the most legendary engineers, he was like, "That's the one, kid."
28 like, inch.
Dude, it's a 14 by 28. It's insane. And it's gum and mahogany, and it's so good. But Dave used it on when I finally, you know, he was like, "Well, you gotta, I gotta get that thing." And I'm like, "Sorry, dude, can't sell it to you." And then as I hung up the phone, I'm like, "Did I just tell Dave Grohl no? Like, what a stupid thing." And I was like, "Yeah, dude, whatever. I'll make you another one. Go for it." So he actually has that Silver Sparkle kit, and he used it on that play documentary he did. But that was where he played all these instruments himself, and that was like the last kit that got played, which was super cool. But I usually have to bring in a 28 inch. Everybody wants to try it, but it doesn't play like a normal 28 because a lot of those drums are like marching drums converted, but these are actually made as like a bass drum, but it's super fun to play. It doesn't feel like a 28. It's not like fighting you the entire time. So yeah, people love that stuff. So I just bring in a whole bunch of shit. I bring in light cymbals, dark cymbals. You know, I still bring in a few Z customs here and there that find their way on the session, which is super funny. But yeah, man, it's
what just, would be the of- what would be the kit sizes if it was like, all right, we got to do a couple of rock tunes. Like, what sizes would you throw up?
16 or 14 by 22. The standard is 8 by 12, 9 by 13. You know, depending on if they want one or two rack toms, and then 16 by 16, and then an 18 if they want two. But honestly, all I'm seeing lately is 13, 16, 22, and just super simple. And it just sounds huge, you know. The 14s, I think lately, have they're a great size, but everybody likes that 16 by 22 because it's that really nice. Like, it's still punchy, it's thumpy, but, you know, 18 by 22 has never been a size I liked. I just don't. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, you know, you're just throwing a hot dog down a hallway kind of thing. So a little strange, and whatever that means. You know.
What about 24s? Do they get used much?
It depends. Sometimes they do. Like, it's really, that's the thing. The 22 is the go-to every time. Like, because it's just that perfect, like, not too big, not too small. 20, I'll always bring it. I will usually bring a 20, two different 22s. And then a 24, and then the 28, because it's just goofy and they love having it there. Gets used sometimes, which is great. The 20s don't have enough meat to it. I hate to say that. It's just like, I love the sizes, but everybody kind of hits that 16 by 22. And sometimes if they need to be a little bit more, you know, need the note to be a little bit more short, then they'll go with the 14, 22. But the 24 kind of sits in the corner most of the time, you know. If they need something big and all that stuff, it's fine. But usually what ends up happening is we take out, you know, a towel from the 22 and I'll loosen up the head a little bit, and that's it. Because they also don't want to move that much shit. They're like, it's good the way it is.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's fine. And then you have to deal with the rack tom moving at all. So yeah, I mean,
is your tuning different when you're doing a recording sessions versus a live teching gig?
Yeah, a lot of the times, I mean, because, you know, I have the same, you know, fundamentals of it too, just like setting the head up and stretching it out and stuff. But usually for the studio, I'll tune it a little bit lower, you know, because it's like it needs to be a little bit more dead, but I don't want to put a ton of stuff on it. I like to start at a good kind of baseline, and then we'll add and kind of subtract as we need to. But versus live, I mean, live, I'll tune them up a little bit just because I need to cut through the room and, you know, that's when we're going to be using a little bit more muffling. And, you know, then you kind of need to work with the front of house guy and figure out what they think is good. And, you know, the drummer's usually kind of like, yeah, you guys figure that out. You know what I like? But some dudes that I tech for, like on the road, are very particular. They want to get in and just, you know, tune up. And I love that. You know, I think that kind of gives their sound. They put their own spin on their sound for sure. But yeah, studio is kind of a different animal. You know, it really, I hate to say, you know, like there's a lot of great live techs that will come tech in the studio and they do good enough. But a lot of the times I would get called in because they're like, oh, you know, producer I would work with would be like, oh yeah, so-and-so is coming in, but they want to use their live guy. I was like, yeah, great, do the thing. And then, you know, you'd get a call 4 or 5 hours into it. They're like, yeah, you might want to pop down here. So, but, and it's nothing crazy. It's not like they did anything wrong. It's just, you know, I think when you have ears for the other thing and you're just so used to it, and a lot of the times live techs have the tendency to just throw everything on it like they would. But, you know, the microphones you're using live versus studio is like a whole, you know, it's not even close, you know, and using, you know, seeing guys use like 30 mics on a drum kit before, you know, they're getting stuff on the room and, you know, they've got the weird under snare mic or the trash mic that just sits over there under the floor tom. So yeah, it really depends really what you're going for, but it is a different approach. I think, I mean, the fundamentals are the same. You know, you're going to seat the head, do all that stuff. You got to stretch everything out. But a lot of the times what I feel like too, is if we're lucky to have like a setup day in the studio, I'll put, you know, if I do change the head, sometimes the guys are just like, yeah, just leave them and they're in good shape. But I like to let everything just kind of settle where it is. You know, if we have the luxury of, you know, tracking drums is a luxury nowadays anyways, but if we have the luxury to set up, is like, we'll get stuff, we'll get a few sounds, let the drums fall. And then the next morning, that's where, like, you know, barometric pressure and all that stuff kind of stabilizes. And then you're just like, you're going to town. It's super fun. And then, you know, tune them up, hit them, they fall, and then let the person come in and do the real work. So,
man, how do you have that fun 28 setup? Is it like low and padded? Is it high and open? Like, what is it?
I have, yeah, it's crazy, man. Like that thing, I put a coated PowerStroke 3 on the batter head, a small towel taped up against the Rezo head, and then a fiber skin without a hole. And it sounds so good. No hole. And, you know, you walk in and people are like, we're going to have to, like, and I was like, just hit it. And usually the engineer's like, don't touch it. And they'll be like, get the other thing out, and they'll just do their shit. So that's kind of how I've had it always set up. I don't think I've ever, to be completely honest, I don't think I've ever put on a clear power stroke or like a clear head, you know, to put on the batter side. And I think that's just what the magic is. I don't do any felt strip or anything like that. It's just straight tuning it. I tune the Rezo head just a step higher, and then that's it, man. It sounds so good. But everybody loves playing. It has this crazy response to where it's like, you know, if you play I feel like if you play a 26, it's just like you're working for that thing all day. It's like, oh my God, you know. But if you play the 28, it weirdly plays like a 22. It's just got this cool, like, response to it. Granted, sometimes with the beaters, I kind of made my own extended version of it too, because, you know, 28's here, like the beater would be down here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, luckily access to a machine shop and all that stuff. So I just made my own, like, rod, and I took off whatever, you know, DW iron cover beater or the felt guy or whatever. And I just popped on and made my own. So it kind of hit the thing. And I think, and then I would just adjust the pedal, you know, to have a little bit better of a spring action. And it's been great. Guys love that thing. It's so fun to play. I love playing it too, but it's a trip. Once you play it a bunch, then you play something else, you're like, oh my God.
Like a toy.
It's so big. Yeah. It's great. It's super fun, man. I love it.
Sick. Well, I have no more questions. You fulfilled my nerdiness. Thank you.
There it is, man.
Once again, thank you for listening. Thanks for your support over these 5 seasons. If you haven't given us a review, please do that in the interim while we take these couple weeks to get the next season together. Can't thank you enough. You can always reach me at drumkennypodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on socials at the Drum Factory Direct Instagram. or my personal page, Mike Dawson Drums. And that's it for this season. So thank you so much, and we'll see you in a few.